CliffCentral.com.
Sage the Gemini hanging out is called a gas pedal. Wandile Mulebats is in the building. He's busy Snapchatting. He's like all millennial and cool and like, hey?
I'm trying to be cool like you.
You are relevant. You're so cool. Oh, whatever.
Yeah, no.
Whatever. Wandile Mulebats in the building is going to get nice and tight on that microphone. Have you Snapchatted now?
Yeah, I have. I have.
Okay. You've done your whole thing.
Yeah, I've done my whole thing. I'm back.
So, dude, it's this difficult to even figure out how to introduce you. I mean, I could go with film star because you've done movies. I could go with TV star because I could go with, you know, the case where it turned out to be a good situation for a KTV presenter.
Oh, my gosh. You took it there. Oh, my goodness.
There's many different ways. I think, though, that what might be the coolest to lead with is the fact that you're not just on screen. In fact, you're making most of your noise at the moment off screen.
Yeah.
Which I think is so cool. But everybody, like, must always just pigeonhole you as actor, right?
That's even nice. You're being nice. I usually get pigeonholed as that KTV guy. You know that guy from KTV?
No ways.
I'm telling you.
You've done so much since then. You've been in international movies. I don't believe people are still on the KTV
like,
tip.
Oh, but you used to be on KTV. I'm like,
no
really?
Ways.
Guys, I'm like 100 years old. How do you even know that? You know what I mean? But yeah, it's been great, man. It's been really awesome.
Yeah.
Really awesome.
Who pushed you to get into the whole thing? I mean, if we're going to talk about KTV and bring it up, we may as well just go there.
It was my mother. It wasn't really like the whole like you're so talented, go act. I was just overly active, and my mother's like, okay, he's gonna drive me crazy. Let's do something with this energy. And I just went to an agent, and she was like, okay, let him run around on the set every day, and then he'll come home tired and sleep.
Yeah.
So that was the plan, you know.
And so when did you start that? And that was your first big thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did my first film when I was like 10.
It's insane.
Called Cry the Beloved Country.
Well, I mean, geez, what a first film. That's
I
not
know,
exactly.
Dude. You know, with Mufasa.
Wow.
James Earl Jones. It was incredible, man. I think from that point, the bug bit, you know?
That's
and I was
insane.
Just like, I really want to do this. I really want to make content.
But wait, okay, so at the age of 10, though, doing Cry the Beloved Country, that would have put... When was that shot? What year was that?
Yo, 10, that was 1991.
I mean, that's... So at 10, how do they... this is what I also want... A lot of the time... Like, I wonder sometimes when I watch something that has... A meaning, not that I mean, all entertainment has a meaning, but sometimes I watch something like I'll watch, say, for instance, I don't know, really heavy document like TV show or something on it, like whatever it is, and I'll think, how do they explain to the kids what they're a part of? Because at 10, who explained to you that you were part of this film that had a very, very strong
heavy message?
Yeah.
I don't think, to be honest, I think the benefit of having a great director, you know, because when you're a kid, you don't really want to be told that you're doing a message piece on apartheid and how this father loses his son. You know, you really want to be told about the character and who you're playing, you know. And I think for me, it was just, I was burdened with it. I was really just given the opportunity to just play a role, which was just incredible. You know what I mean?
I mean, now you're downplaying it, though, because that's quite a big
first
gig.
No, dude.
Some kids are like, my handy Andy ad was like my big break in life. For you, I mean, that's massive. That was a huge set. In the context of where South Africa was, what the message of the movie, what was about. I mean, it's insane. That's a ridiculous first.
It was a great opportunity.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember the auditioning process was weird because, like, you're sat there with, like, this Deirdre lady, and she sort of just asked us about, like, growing up and... all that kind of stuff. Then it was 10 kids, then it was 3 kids, then it was 2 kids, then it was just me, you know? And it wasn't really like, I must be honest, it wasn't an audition process. I think the director just, he was literally just sitting there in the back, and we didn't even know he was there.
Mm.
He just wanted to see how we talk and how we feel around people. It was an incredible opportunity. I mean, I can't even explain it.
So when you set the bar there, like, I mean, oh, it's not like you set the bar at like a school play.
Downhill from there, you know.
And then you do the KTV thing, and then it just kind of, I mean, it's a pretty organic journey.
It was. I think... over and above my hyperactivity, my mother sort of realized that there was a performer in me, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, either he's going to get expelled from every school he goes to, or we're going to use it constructively. And I guess it was just an incredible mix of my parents. My parents are like, my father's a pastor, my mother's a social worker. So you can imagine, they're like, okay, he wants to be an actor.
No, but then if he's going to be an actor in Cry the Beloved Country and they do what they do, like that must be like...
Then it makes sense.
Yeah, like a huge deal.
Yeah, it makes sense. And they're just supported, you know, which is incredible. And I've got 3 brothers. two older and one younger than me. And I think the big thing with them was just like, when you're back at home, dude, you're one of us, bro. Mm-hmm. You clean the toilet, you're just chilling with all of us, you know. Yeah. It helped. I mean, it was like an army of kids. I mean, I've got like 100 cousins.
But are you the only one that's in this field, or is everyone else?
No, my brothers have got real jobs.
Okay.
my oldest brother is a chartered marketer.
Okay.
And the one above him, Lebuhang, is a chartered accountant.
Wow.
My younger brother is a chef. So all of them have got like proper jobs. And then like there's this one guy who's like an actor.
But four brothers is also quite an interesting dynamic as well. I mean, that's like, you're going to get dragged every 4 seconds for anything you do.
It's like, it was cool on summer. Yeah. You know? Now it's December, boss. So like our Decembers were like brilliant. You know, we're breaking classes. We're like, I had a thing where I used to flush toilet potatoes down the toilet.
What?
Don't ask me.
Why would you?
I don't know.
You know, this was going, I was so impressed by you. And then I find out that you're a potato flusher. What does that even mean?
I don't even know what it was about. I got into so much trouble, dude.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, and my mother was to whoop my bum.
Yeah, that's good.
So it was awesome though, you know, because my mother's got two sisters and they've all got boys. My father's got like 9 siblings and they've got like a ton of kids. So like December was just great, you know, and having 3 brothers just felt like, I don't know, it just felt really natural, you know.
Are there any, I mean, sometimes you'll speak to people that got into the entertainment industry at a young age and they have quite a negative rhetoric to report.
100%.
Yours seems like it was a really positive thing, though. I mean, it's not, you're not sitting here like crying, saying, crack, oh, it was the worst. Yeah, like.
I think, yeah, primarily it's probably because my mother just doesn't take any teeth. So I never let, not that I never, I think there were probably times when my mom had to put me to line, you know. I don't know. The showbiz thing for me was always, it was fun, dude, you know. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, going onto set and the thing when you're a child star, you don't really have to worry about page count and what we're losing light and hurry up, get the shot. They're sort of nice to you all the time. So for me, being on set was fun. It was like an extra mural that I used to do. Like, after school, I'd go to KTV and Saturday I'd do Reggie's Rush, Power Edition. It was fun, man, you know. And it helped. I think the money thing was kept very far from me. My parents dealt with the money thing. And to be honest, I think that probably was a thing. That it wasn't, it never felt like a job. It was fun and was something for me to do on a Saturday.
How did you survive being at school and everyone wanting to be on the Reggie's Rush?
Oh my gosh.
Because I think there's not a kid that was exposed to Reggie's Rush that did not want to be on that show and dreamt about getting a trolley and a Reggie's store and just hitting it hard.
Every like Valentine's Day, you get like a little letter. Like, hi, Wendy, I think you're very handsome. And I'm like, yeah, right, girl, you don't like me. You want to get on Reggie's Rush.
Yeah.
But it was cool, man. Like, you know, just a Sacred Heart also, I think, was like quite an artistic school.
Yeah.
And so they were like, you know, Pabi was there. There were people like just were in the media space, so it helped, you know.
Yeah.
Really a thing.
All the KTV kids hanging out at Sacred Heart.
Yeah, dude, what can we say?
Just taking over. Okay, so, but then you have a real decision to make in matric about what you're going to do.
100%.
But you probably knew. What was that time? What were you thinking? What were the other options? What were the, oof, or dude, was it just a given?
It was a facilitated given, if I can say it that way. A very political answer. It was like, I really need to explain to my father that my plan wasn't really just go holotani sketch, go to kolo, you know. Like, it was like I had a plan to provide for my family one day, and actually make it a career, you know. And my brother being an accountant, you can imagine, like, he was like, look, we're going to support you with this one, but just explain to Papa what you want to do. Because if you go to Papa and say, no, I want to be an actor, and that's it, he's going to tell you, forget about it. And I think once my father accepted and realized that actually I had a plan, you know, he was very supportive. It was a hard one to do because, I mean, you know, there was the BCom accounting route, which is very attractive. Every black kid does BCom accounting. It's like they wake up, BCom accounting, BCom accounting. So it's like going so far off the beaten track was a bit of a thing for my mother and father. And I think when they started to see Coastal really working, they really started to support it, you know, because we started in university, which helped a lot.
So let's talk about that, opening up a company in university, making it work, then also like working for lots of other people. Because you've got this sort of dual role then. In fact, this trial role of getting an education, starting a company, and also working for other people and building your own brand 100%. As an actor.
It's like a tripartite alliance. Yeah. It's very complicated.
Complicated. I mean, and explosive. Then you have to have like an actual life.
Exactly.
And need people to have children with one day.
One day. Thank God for Jessica. No, it helped. It was a gift and a curse, because I think having been on set for such a long time, you know, I sort of knew how film works. And I should be careful how I say this, but I just couldn't see myself being employed, if that makes sense. Because I wanted to make the content, you know. And one of the things that was very important about the advice I got from my father was that I want to take agency of my life, you know. Whereas sometimes as an actor, you're sort of waiting for gigs to come to you. And the awesome opportunity that Coastal represents for me is that I can create content and go make it. You know, I can visualize a story and create it myself and not have to wait for an audition. Because, I mean, it gets tough. It gets quiet as hell. And so, it was like just trying to juggle the experience that I had as a kid to being a teenager, to being a young adult on film sets, and trying to translate it into my company, which was, as you're saying, dude, it wasn't easy.
And then how do you, if you're on a set and you're being employed by someone, because you've done some, I mean, you're speaking about this like you haven't been in overseas movies and massive TV shows and stuff like that.
No,
you have though. But how do you then, it must be such a switch. Because now someone else is telling you what to do, and you have to tell other people what to do.
Yeah, you know, it's
you're like, that shot's not going to work. So do I go with it? Do I say something?
Do I just keep quiet?
Sometimes it's a bit easier to be ignorant.
It is. Sometimes it is, you know. And I think Minister Davis said this incredible thing at a speech once. He said, filmmaking is probably the best team sport ever. Because you can't. It's not about the director. Like, we all do that because we want something to sell. Like, it's a John Favreau film. It's a Clint Eastwood film, you know. It's a Gary F. Grey movie. It really is. It's a team sport, and everyone has to play their position. And I think it's also a lot about humility sometimes, you know. Like, there's, like, with Scottness, my boy, I love him. I've known him for 20 years, you know. We fought with him. Like, I was like, dude, you can't get that shot. It's too expensive. Forget about it. And sometimes you have to just, like, step back and let someone take the reins in certain areas, which is hard to do. But, I mean, I think the experience of being on set and seeing how many roles there were helpful for me as a young man trying to make a living, because I realized that actually acting is important. Yeah, it's great. But there's art direction. The sound design, all these other roles that we never see. And so for me, it was great. It was enlightening, I guess, to be on all these sets and understand how it actually works.
So dope. Hanging out with Wandile Mulubatsi. We're going to speak in a second about a very, very cool initiative from the Hear Me Move movie, which is great to see something have legs like this, that it doesn't just come out into, like, the cinemas and then, go into DSTV box office. Like, it actually it continues like a cycle and lives outside of it.
100%.
And what I also think, and we'll speak about it in a sec, is really cool, is kind of just the social message. Because film can be such a powerful medium.
Definitely.
To tell stories and inspire people.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about, I guess, creating jobs, which is what you're doing through the work that you do, but also inspiring some sort of social change.
100%.
So how does Wandile get it all in, plus almost have... I mean, you've had a second kid now, right?
Yes!
It's happened.
I've got a beautiful girl. Can you imagine how stressed I am? I got my gun license ready, dog. And she's so cute. I'm like, I can see you niggas. I can see you. I can see you guys just want to come and make my... I'm like, yo, don't even... Chitty chitty bang bang, baby.
So how does he do... Two kids, a wife, making movies, educational tours, it's all on the way. He's going to give us the inside next. Lil Wayne, Charlie Puth's called Nothing But Trouble. You don't seem very naughty, Wandile. I don't know. Are you?
I'm terrible. I'm the most naughtiest guy in the world.
What's the baddest thing you've ever done?
Oh, no, really?
The most hardcore
radio,
thing.
Really?
The most hardcore thing you've ever done.
The most hardcore thing I've ever done is like going 180 on the highway. I'm self-editing now, you know?
Okay, yeah.
The policy conference is coming up, so I'm trying to get nominations. So, like, you know? I've been very guarded now. What's the naughtiest thing I've... Oh, I know, but I can't say that.
Just give me like a taste. You can simmer it down. Let's pretend you're a character.
It's not me. It's another guy.
Okay.
It was a... I shouldn't... Ari, dude. It was a... how can I say this? It was very bad behavior.
Okay.
Yeah, with my wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it was good. It was worth being adventurous.
Okay. It's nice. Like sex in public or
something. Oh, no. Anyway, how's this weather? Okay? How's this
in weather? Bad weather, in public.
Oh, huh? My gosh.
Okay. All right, we're hanging out with Wandile, and obviously your company's Coal Stove Pictures. I was just looking now, you're like, you're an employer of note. There's lots of people involved in this thing. When you run salaries every month, that's like, all this high.
It hits us, and I'm like, oh, ouch, ouch, ouch.
You're running a house. You've even got a finance and administrative manager. Like, that's how serious this is.
You know why? Because Connors and I were like, okay, we're not doing this anymore. We've got to pay people on the same day every month. Just because I want to do this, please.
But yeah. You know that you're a proper company when you start having one person whose job it is just to pay everyone.
Just pay everyone.
Yeah.
When you get an invoice, you get 2 days. You've got 48 hours.
Yes.
It's a disclaimer that we say, okay, look, when you send an invoice, it's going to take 2 days, but it's going to be paid. Don't worry. It's going to be paid.
So there's some serious notable projects, obviously, that you guys have done. But one is Hear Me Move, which like I said at the top of this when I was introing you, it feels like yesterday that Buntle was sitting... Yeah, telling us about the movie and that it was going to come out.
Like,
and she's just skyrocketed, you know, since that. So you clearly got an eye for talent.
That's Scott. Hey, that's all Scott. Like, Scott is, he spotted Nyaniso, Buntle, and Mbuso. Like, he's got that thing. I don't know how he does it. Like, he just sees diamonds and he's just like, okay,
and then
this I can work
off
with.
They go.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, this movie is huge. I mean, in the fabric of film and pop culture in SA, it's a huge deal, Hear Me Move. Before we even get into what you're doing now with the school's tour and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It was a huge deal at the time because it was the first proper, like, dance movie coming out of SA.
Yeah, 100%.
Just give me an insight into the journey you travel with getting something like that into a cinema, because that was a journey that you traveled with that film.
Definitely, man. I think it's like, you know, you look at the trope of dance films. I mean, you've got Step Up 1 to, like, 100. You've got, you got Served.
Was a Chris Brown. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, we just felt that there has to be a South African response to this. Because, I mean, if you look at our music, House, Sport, Dress, Pantola, it's like, it's massive, you know? Like, it's like
a
culture,
a huge
you know
part
what I mean?
Of, yeah.
And so we were like, at Vitz, we were like, oh, guys, let's write a script. It'll be talk about, like,
wow,
culture.
Vitz days.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
sure.
We'll shoot it tomorrow and we'll get into the cinemas tomorrow. And little do we know, it will take like 3 years to get it done. But the genesis was that we just wanted to capture like urban Africa, you know? Mm. So like instead of us seeing like the hyenas and the savannah and the AIDS written cities, let's show something awesome, like the excitement of house music, the excitement of being on the streets of Jersey at 1:30 in the morning. Like, what does that feel like, you know? And let's share that with the world. Because when we're out in Cannes, like, it was just... We just felt like, you know, the Argentinian guys were making incredible movies. Young Italians were making incredible movies. And, like, our movies were all, like, very message-based, you know? And it's very important. Like, we need that stuff.
Mm.
But we also want to give, like, a better picture of the country. Because there's more to the country than just the issues that we have in South Africa.
So, I mean, but this is hard work, right? I mean, this is like, you got to write the thing, you got to workshop it, you got to get the money.
Dude,
I mean, what is the...
Got to get the money.
What is the film space like in SA?
It's tough, but it's exponentially getting better.
Hmm.
The kind of support that we've got from the Department of Trade and Industry, Arts and Culture, even now brands are getting involved, you know? Like, they realize that actually... Getting those bumps on seats and then you can look at it like a night tick for like 10 minutes is worth something, you know, and it's growing. When we came out, I guess I should be honest. I mean, like, we're it's three guys, all of us are under 35. We're like, we got CC'd in on emails that said, you guys are flight risks, you know, literally. Like, they thought, okay, if we give these guys like R5, they're going to disappear. And I mean, it's a warranted fear, I guess. It's understandable. So raising the money was not easy, but it's gotten a lot easier. I guess if I can say that.
Is it cool? I mean, there's pros and cons to navigating something, because I mean, essentially, you've got to create the model now. The South African film space requires filmmakers to build a commercial model and to build a culture of moviegoers in South Africa going to see South African stuff. And that's got pros and it's got cons. I guess the pros are that you can really take it in whatever direction you want to. And the cons are that you just got to every single day walk into a different room and 100%. Have to sell yourself to a different person.
Yeah, and you have to be clear about what you're selling. You know, I think for a long time, when you come out of Vitz, you know, you're like, you're all idealistic and you're like, it's all about the story. And you realize very quickly that actually it's about creating date night movies. You know, mm-hmm. it sounds terrible when you say it, but it's like when you go out to watch a movie, more often than not, you want to relax, you want to mm-hmm. have fun, you want to watch people fall in love, you want to cry a bit, laugh a bit, you know, get upset a bit, you know, and mm-hmm. so it has to be entertainment. And that's been a big learning curve that Kosovo has gone through. Because mm-hmm. we realize that actually the films that we want to make, it's not about us. It's about what the audience wants to see. Mm. That's the biggest thing.
Tell me about this when it like hits, like the Friday that Yummy Move comes out in cinemas.
Dude, you're touching on emotional subject matter. it's hectic because like you ask any producer, you're looking at least a 4-year lead in time to raise raise money for a film, you know, and to get a distributor to pick it up and put it out into 50 cinemas, when you get a brand on board and give you money for marketing, you know, when you get your social media program right and you're buying the boosts and you're doing all that kind of stuff, it's been a long period, it's been a long journey, I guess. And so when it opens that Friday, you're half scared and just completely exhausted and excited at the same time. It's an incredible feeling, man. And the thing that's problematic about it is it's addictive, you know? Because like you get that rush and you're like, okay.
What does your phone look like? I mean, do they track it in real time? Are you going to each cinema to see how many people are buying tickets? What was that weekend like?
It's painful. I mean, my wife will tell you, like, it's me, my phone, and no one else, like, for that weekend, you know, because, like, you're trying to get the numbers from Musgrave, you're trying to get the numbers from Canal Walk, you're trying to get the numbers from the Northwest Cinema, you know, you're not really present for those 3 days, because all you're looking at is, I need this opening weekend to be good. And thankfully, Hear Me Move, we had an awesome opening weekend, you know, and so that helped us sustain for that 7-week run.
Because you remember all the stuff around other South African movies they've released and then they get taken off cinema. It's a very cutthroat commercial thing, this.
It's brutal, man.
Yeah. Did you realize that you had this business acumen within you? Or have you had to really dig deep and find this thing?
I've had to dig deep to places that I didn't even know. To places I didn't know I had places, you know? You had to dig deep. And you have to... It's crazy, dude. But like... I'll be honest, man. Like, you get to a point where you're like, you know, that whiskey, that cigar, every other night looks very friendly, you know, because you wanna quieten down the noise, you know, and you need to have people around you that'll say, okay, look, you're stressed, but enough now, you know. You need that because otherwise you'll go crazy. Tell Me Sweet Something. It's like they pulled that movie off too early, you know, and it was just like, it was frustrating because I'll look, no fear or favor. I guess we're on Cliff Central, we can tell the truth. It's like, you can actually feel Akil's frustration, you know, and all the filmmakers around him were less like, what the hell are they doing? Because it's like, the movie was doing well, and it's great. Every time there's a success for us, it's brilliant, because then the distributor's more confident to give you more screens, you know? But it's hectic, bro. I mean, you're competing against Tyler Perry, Russell Crowe, that pretty Ryan Gosling. It's hard, man, it's hard.
But then you do knock it out the park, and you have a great opening weekend, and suddenly all sorts of people start to believe in you. And then things like this happen that you probably never would have predicted in a million years, where something can come of a movie. So let's talk for a second about the Hear Me Move Educational Schools Tour.
Yeah.
At Vitz, this was not on the...
This is not on the picture.
I think what's cool about it, and you're going to tell us what it is in a second, but what's cool about it is that it shows that if you take the initiative and you start to build momentum, other people start buying into it.
Yeah.
So what is the Schools Tour all about?
So basically, like, we had this big vision of creating, like, 8 Hear Me Move movies, you know, creating like a franchise. And we always wanted to make like a musical of the film. And actually, for the last maybe 2 years or so, we've been working on it and trying to wriggle the budget, make it make sense. And we finally got support from Arts and Culture to do a musical of it. And we've been working with Paul Mujaji, who's the choreographer on the film, and he's the producer and choreographer on this project now. And like, he just came in one day. We had written all these beautiful scripts, and he was just like, guys, have you guys seen the headlines the last 2 months? We're like, yeah, we've seen them. It's really terrible. And he's like, yeah, so what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And it was like, it was just like, it was incredible. I'll never forget that meeting, because like, Paul was just like, okay, we've got an opportunity. We've got young people's attention. We've got to say something. And it was just like that whole active citizen street thing. You know, it was just like, guys, we've got to do something as young people and address this issue. And I thank Paul every day for doing that, because it would have just been another musical that just didn't mean anything. Mm. But now actually going to schools and actually touching young people and getting them to talk about something that's kind of difficult to talk about, you know?
And, I mean, it's an unbelievable thing. And certainly for you, it must take on a different meaning when there's a social message involved in something.
Definitely, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, you work so hard, man. I think you can relate, man. Like, you're in studio every day and you're doing these cool interviews. But if people are listening to your show and they're like, nothing happens, like, if they don't, there's no light that goes switched on or nothing happens inside, it's like, what's the point? And for us as content creators, you know, like, something like this is so important because Hear Me Move is cool, you know? And not because we say it's like, we don't think it's cool. Like, people have said it's cool, you know? And now we're using that cool thing to speak about something that's kind of tough. I mean, sexual violence against young women and children in this country is borderline demonic, man, you know? And so to get, like, companies like Guanel, Enough is Enough, get the Ibis reproductive people on board, get us in culture, to actually get us to talk to young people about it is key, because otherwise we just carry on like everything's fine, and it's not.
So what role do you think you have to play in South Africa? What's your, you know, if we speak about active citizenship, if we speak about people taking their talents or doing the things that they do, but sort of impacting the country in a more positive way, what role do you think you play in South Africa?
I mean, we've got a slogan at Coastal that we honestly live by, you know, which is global African excellence. And it's like we need to. So what I live by is that my cool is just as cool as Paris, just as cool as New York, just as cool as London, you know. And it's like my role is to, one, encourage young people to celebrate their coolness, their local coolness. Not that, like, we're trying to adopt something else. Like, what Casper did this weekend, like, is not for me. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, there's a photo that's, like, going around, you know, of him standing on the edge of the stage, and there's, like, lights in front of him.
This is the one AKA tweeted.
Oh, damn.
Possibly, yeah.
And I'm just like, I think that's what my role is. Like, it's to get people to understand that, like, you can do that. You can fill up FNB, and you don't have to have Whitney Houston opening the show. You can have local acts opening the show. And so it's like, at Coastal, we believe that global African excellence is our mission. We're going to celebrate the coolness of Africa, and we're going to share it with the world and with Africa itself.
So dope. I'm going to land it with one final question. The one thing you really want your kids to learn from you.
Oh, man. I think it's... it's what my father taught me, and that you must take agency of your life, man. Like, you can't wait for people to tell you you're good. You can't sit back and just complain about stuff. You have to take it by the horns, you know, and do your best. And I think that's the biggest thing that I want to teach my son and my daughter. Every time I say that, I get it. That they really are the architects of their own future. And it sounds so lame and so Barack Obama-ish, but I believe that it's true, you know, that you need to be the architect of your own destiny. And it's about hard work, man. And you're going to get a lot of no's. Like, one thing that we love at Coastal, like, if you get a no, we know that we're one step close to getting the yes.
Yeah.
Like, we try to get 10 no's a week, you know, and then we know that, okay, we're going to get a yes next week. We're going to get a yes next week. Because if you just sit and wait, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
So dope hanging out. Wandile, how do we keep up with you all day? You've been Snapchatting the whole time here. How do we find all of this?
I'm trying to be relevant. You're putting under pressure. I'm trying to be like, my Twitter game is whack. You know, I've got a...
we're so
I know! At Wandile Molivatsi on Instagram.
Okay.
And at Wandile Molivatsi on Twitter.
Just Google him. You'll find all the information there.
You're embarrassing me.
It's okay. It's 2018. We've all got New Year's resolutions.
I'm going to change, guys. Thank you so much, dude. This was awesome.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for hanging out. What a rock star. Yeah.
So central.
Very,
thank
very
you,
cool. Wandile Molivatsi.
And they gave me free coffee. I love this place. Coming back. CliffCentral.com.